It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama. Your calls, comments, and texts are welcome at 251-343-0106.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do. And don't you ever forget that.
And now your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
TGIF. Thank God it's Friday. Good evening to the FM Talk 106.5 listening audience. My name is Robert Kennedy Jr. I am your accountability advocate, and this is Kennedy for Alabama. Thank you so much for tuning in on your Friday evening to spend a little time listening to our show. We are really excited about tonight's program, so let's get to it. Tonight, we have four fantastic members of this evening's conversation team. The first is Miss Aquilyn Kennedy.
Good evening, everyone.
Chief Brand Strategist and my lovely wife. The second, joining us by phone, is Senator Doug Jones, the junior senator from the state of Alabama. The third, also joining us by phone in the bottom half hour, is Dr. J.T. Averhart, who is the Democratic nominee for U.S. Congress. And last, but in no wise least, is Mr. Phil Bush, who is working the production board and keeping Kennedy for Alabama sounding good on the airwaves. So, how are you guys doing tonight?
Fantastic. Excellent. It is Friday. Yes.
All right. We're going to go straight to the agenda. In the top half of the hour, we're going to do a candidate spotlight with Senator Doug Jones. In the bottom half of the hour, we'll do a second candidate spotlight with Dr. J.T. Averhart and continue the conversation with our callers until we run out of time at the top of the hour. So, with no further ado, we will go to the phone lines right now and see who do we have on the phone line. Senator Jones, are you there?
Oh, I didn't know if you were talking to me or you were getting a call or a listener. Yes, I'm here. I am here. I, you know, Robert, I just wait for instructions from you, not these subtle things. I just wait for your instructions, and I'm right there.
Yeah, I was kind of cracking up to myself. I was texting back and forth with your press leader on my other line here, and neglected to provide the instructions that I, in fact, would be throwing it to you as soon as we came out of the initial break.
Okay.
So
okay, well, I am here. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate. Joining you guys tonight.
Hey, and I really appreciate you taking the time. As we were joking about a little bit off air, this is an interview that I've wanted to do for quite a while because different than probably what you get from some of the national media, I think when we have local folks asking local questions, it really allows us an opportunity to give the listener something they can really sink their teeth into. So thank you so much for taking some time with us.
No, I completely agree with you, by the way. I much more enjoy these local radio, the local media conversations, because that's who I represent. You know, it's not those national folks, and I represent the folks in Alabama. So I'm just happy to be with you tonight.
Absolutely. So this is the part where I usually ask people about their background, just kind of where they grew up, how they got started along their journey. I'm going to tell your question just a little bit more and just ask, you know, when you were growing up, what did you want to be when you grew up? And how did that kind of point you on a path that would eventually take you to running for office?
Well, it didn't, to be honest with you, it really didn't point me on the path where I ultimately ended up. When I was growing up, I wanted to be an astronaut.
Okay.
I mean, I grew up at a time when the space program was at its zenith. I mean, I was, you know, 6 years old or seven when Alan Shepard first went up. And
yes.
I can tell you, I stayed glued to the TV as a kid all the way through the Apollo missions and the lunar landing. That
okay.
was just a dream. But unfortunately, I had this one little heart murmur issue as a kid that said I could never do it. So I set my sights on baseball, and then that was not ever going to work out.
Okay.
And, you know, ultimately ended up trying to figure some of this out and decided once I got to college at the University of Alabama that, you know, I enjoy the law practice. I
okay.
enjoy representing folks. I enjoy getting out there. Had an opportunity to visit with the late Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas. And
oh, wow.
Talked
okay.
to him about it. He was very encouraging. about, you know, watching lawyers and all, and sat in on Bill Baxley's trial, you know, with the first church bombing case. And that was just inspirational. Got involved in politics about the same time. And, you know, between law and just being active in politics over the years, it just kind of led me to public service, which ultimately led me to the U.S. Senate. And I'm just so honored to be there.
Well, we are honored that that you decided that you didn't want to be the next baseball star and gave us the opportunity to benefit from your focus on service. So, hey, one of the things that we try to do here on Kennedy for Alabama, particularly as we give exposure to candidates up and down the Democratic ticket, is just help the listening audience understand that we're normal, everyday people who are rooted and grounded in Alabama. So one of the things that I know you and I have talked about a lot personally is our thoughts about the Second Amendment. And you mentioned that you are a hunter. And so could you take a little bit of time, tell us when did you learn to shoot, who taught you, and then about your love of hunting?
Yeah, no, you know, I'm like just most kids in Alabama, grew up around guns and loved to have, you know, to just go out and shoot and play. And, you know, it was my grandfather who really taught me how to use a gun, how to use a shotgun. I had a couple when I was a kid, not a whole lot. You know, we lived in Fairfield, which is a pretty suburban, you know, offshoot of outside of Birmingham. So it was not like I could go out in the backyard and, you know, and hunt birds or deer or anything like that. So we had to make some time. And then, you know, I kind of got away. I did a fair amount when I was a kid, especially just shooting, going out and with a .22 rifle or a 20-gauge shotgun and just playing, you know, just doing those kind of things. Did a little bit of hunting, not an awful lot. But I'll tell you what happened. When my youngest son was born, I'd kind of moved away a little bit in terms of that. I was focusing on law practice and so many other things going on in my life. But my youngest son, Christopher, really, you know, at an early age, it was pretty obvious that he was going to enjoy hunting and guns. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to get this. I'm going to get back because I want him to learn how to use a weapon from me. Mm-hmm. I don't want him to learn how to use it on the street or whatever.
Right.
And so I want to take him and so that he can grow up with me, you know, with gun safety and all. And I got to tell you, once we did that, once that started with my son, there is nothing like doing that with your son. I got to tell you, as much as you do it by yourself sometimes, doing that with your son and growing up like that is just amazing. So between deer hunting, turkey hunting, birds, you know, I just love to get out in the woods. I love to get out and do that. And Rick, Christopher and I, on occasion, we'll just go shoot. We'll go to a range and we'll do something to shoot because I think it's important. And, you know, Robert, I really appreciate you talking about it because I'm an avid hunter, but I'm just, you know, I've got a lot of guns.
Right.
And all of the stuff that's been going around about me, about not supporting that I'm a threat to the Second Amendment because I want to do things to keep guns out of the hands of bad people, but let good folks and law-abiding citizens have their guns, enjoy their guns, be able to get their guns. It's really discouraging to see the lies that go out there about how I, you know, about what people perception is about me with the Second Amendment. What they don't see is me just pandering to people. You don't see me on TV ads running around and camouflaging the guns.
Exactly.
Because I think it's just kind of pandering, and I like to stick to the issues. But I enjoy it a lot, and I've got a lot of different firearms to choose from when I go hunting.
And I thought it was important to actually stress that because thematically, we have had that come up with a number of our candidates here over, call it the last 4 to 6 weeks that we've been doing this season of the show. And as a matter of fact, there is a Thursday afternoon segment that I do every week where Sean Sullivan and I ping pong back and forth. And we got into a conversation one day and we were talking about proficiency with firearms. And, you know, we're just kind of kicking it back and forth. And we talked about, you know, being concealed carry permit holders and going to the gun range and stuff like that. And folks literally started texting him and saying, wow, I never heard a Democrat actually talk about guns before. And whether it's what you just described, whether it's what I talked about, when I talked to Dr. J.T. Averhart, when he was on doing his candidate spotlight, or Mr. Rick Neighbors, or Milton Morrow, who's a local candidate running for license commissioner, all of us were communicating that same theme that you were. We want law-abiding citizens to have access to their firearms for the things they like to do, whether it's personal protection or hunting. And there's nothing in any of our platforms that have us going door-to-door and taking guns away from anybody. So
absolutely, not at all, because they come get mine, and I don't want that to happen, you know? And I, you know, I'm glad you mentioned a couple things, because I've got my own concealed carry permit that I have. I've got a lifetime hunting license in the state of Alabama, and I just enjoy it so much. And it's just one of those things. I'll tell you a funny story. When I was, I guess I hadn't been in the Senate but about 6 months,
and
I had a group of, you know, very pro Second Amendment women that came to talk to me, and about a number of things. A lot of things we agreed on. Some I couldn't quite go with. But I asked each one of them what they shot and what they did, and there was one lady there that was a she shot long range.
Oh wow!
I mean, she would do that, and she was a marksman at long range. And I asked her what she shot with, and she told me it was a standard. I can't remember. It was like a 308 or something like that. And I said, well, I've got some, you know, some really good hunting rifles. She said, what's your favorite? And I said, well, you know, I've got this kind of an interesting gun that I took the barrel off an old Remington, and I shoot a 22 6mm 40 degree Ackley improved.
Okay.
They just, it kind of blew them back, because that's not a gun you hear about very often. You can't buy ammunition for it. You've got to you know, have it reloaded. And so I think they walked out of there thinking, okay, this guy talks our language.
Exactly. And so while we're on the subject of talking languages, the other theme that we've been spending a lot of time talking about, and again, it's a conversation that I do a lot more publicly, you know, since we stopped traveling as much as, you know, we were doing the last few years, and that's our church lives. Right. So take a moment. Yep. Just talk about your church life, where you go to church, your faith, your belief in God, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, no, I grew up in the Methodist church. Now, at one point, we kind of moved over when I was a kid to the Baptist church, but I've always really been a Methodist. I, you know, my faith is rooted in my grandmother, who had me all the time where we would go. And I still remember, you know, when I was just a little boy going to, they lived right across from a Methodist church next to the parsonage and right across the street from the Methodist church. And we used to go over there, and I've just kind of grown up. And currently, you know, Louise and I, my wife and I are members of Canterbury Methodist Church.
Okay.
We try to get engaged. Of course, we're still doing a lot of virtual church and virtual Sunday school lessons and that sort of thing. But, you know, Robert, it's your faith that you bring up, I'm not one to really wear religion on my sleeve.
Right.
You know, I don't do that. I go to the Senate prayer breakfast almost every Wednesday morning. It's a great way to kind of talk to colleagues and in a really bipartisan way, because it's both Republicans and Democrats. I've spoken to the group a couple of times on different subjects, but it really informs pretty much a lot of what you do. I mean, it's why I believe that all people should have the same dignity and respect, regardless of who they are and where they live and their status in life. That's what's formed me over the years through that, and that's just that faith. And I don't think I should push mine on somebody else. I think we all have our ways of worshiping and doing those kind of things, and I think it's important that we respect everybody and their own religions, regardless of who it is. And so it's a part of everything I think that folks like me do every day, whether it is in the Senate, whether it's at home, whether it's in business. You just treat people the way that you were brought up to treat according to your faith.
Yeah, absolutely. And part of the reason why I wanted to touch on that is I thought of a little story here on my end that was kind of comical, but it really speaks to our culture and how we grew up here in the state of Alabama and how deeply rooted we are in our faith. So I was at a global meeting when I was still working, you know, in a corporate job, and met this young lady, the most beautiful Southern accent you had ever heard. So we got to talking, and sometimes when we're not here, people don't recognize my accent and they don't think that I'm from Alabama. But it turns out she was from your neck of the woods up in Birmingham, and she was one of our national account directors. And so we got to talking with her, and one of the commercial officers who was basically critiquing her on a sales pitch that she had done. And he was trying to counsel her on asking people about their faith life. And when I pulled him to the side, because we had the same supervisor, I explained to him, when we sit down and start talking to people, a lot of times people are going to ask you where you went to school, where you went to church, you know, who's your mom and them, all that kind of stuff. And so culturally in the state of Alabama, it wasn't something that was frowned upon. So right. I agree with you wholeheartedly. We're all on the path to Judgment Day, and it's just how we choose to get there. So thank you for taking a little bit of time to talk God and guns with me.
Sure, not a problem.
So if it's okay with you, I'd like to transition just slightly to talk a little bit about what you've done in the Senate and then wrap up talking a little bit about the campaign, because I know you have a hard stop here at the bottom half of the hour. Is that okay if we do that for a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks for doing it.
Okay. So I don't know if you remember this because you have so many memories running through your head, but the very first time that I saw you after you had taken the oath of office was at an ADC conference. That stands for Alabama Democratic Conference. It's one mm-hmm. of the Democratic organizations. And I shook your hand, I gave you a hug, and I said, thank you. And what I was thanking you for is that you made a promise to the state of Alabama that when you went to Washington, D.C., that you were going to make a conscious attempt to reach across the aisle right. to work in collaboration with Republican colleagues and actually find common ground and get things done. And you had started on a path that has led you to 21 bipartisan bills, if my count is correct.
Yep, that's so, correct. That's
so could you take a little time? Because, you know, when I'm listening to Terry Latham yesterday on Jeff Poor's show, she's not talking about that, right? So could you just take the opportunity to explain to folks what a senator really does and why that's good for the state of Alabama?
Absolutely. You know, look, I've campaigned on that because that's how I was grown up.
Yes.
I worked in the Senate with Howell Heflin, and that's what he did in the 1979 and 80. I saw a Senate really function in a bipartisan way. And not that they didn't have partisan disagreements and arguments, they did.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, they put their country over their party. And that's what I think I've tried to do, and I think I've been as successful in that as a Democrat, which is in the minority in the Senate, in the minority party that doesn't control the White House, as you said. It's been 21 bills, and I got to tell you, Robert, I'm really proud of that because I think that for a freshman senator in the first 2.5 years to have 21 bills in a minority party, you know, passed, signed by the President of the United States, that's a pretty good achievement, and they are bipartisan bills. They're helping small businesses. They're helping farmers. They're helping folks in different areas. We've got us. I even had Ted Cruz as a co-lead on a civil rights bill,
mm-hmm.
Cold Case Collection Act that we did. But you've got to be able to do that. That's the only way you can succeed. There is no, you cannot do a my way or the highway kind of thing. And so I'm really proud of that. I've been recognized as one of the most bipartisan senators in the Senate. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce gave me an award for that, as well as protecting the free enterprise system, which is mm-hmm. kind of comical if you see all these ads running by my opponent and others, or you listen to the chairman of the Republican Party, they think I'm just a socialist. The Chamber of Commerce gave me their top award for leadership in protecting the free enterprise system. That's not socialism, as I say in a new TV ad that we've got. That's One Alabama.
Yes.
And that's what we've tried to do, and it's the only way you can really get something done. You can be a partisan if you want to and stick with a pure partisan line, but the fact of the matter is you've got to be an independent voice and you've got to reach across the aisle. But I'm going to tell you, Robert, sometimes I got to pull some people in my own party.
Oh, no doubt.
You know, and to get things done. And that, I think, is a real key for this. And it's why I think a voice like mine is important, because you can pull on both sides of the aisle to where they need to come to get something done for the people of Alabama, get something done for the people of America.
Absolutely, and I want to double click on a couple of things you said, because the listening audience at FM Talk 106.5 tends to skew right of center. And when we decided to do our program on this show, it was with intention, right? We definitely wanted to talk to folks who aren't necessarily going to come to an event that's labeled a Democratic event. And so just to reinforce, when we talk about these 21 bipartisan bills, what that means is that there was a Republican co-sponsor of the bill and that the bill—
The two of us led the bill.
Yep.
It was a co-lead. And that's an important distinction.
Yes.
Because you can be a co-sponsor, but when you're a lead, it means you've partnered with somebody to lead the bill and are dedicated to getting votes in both parties.
Absolutely. And all of those bills came into law because they were signed by President Trump. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Absolutely. Everyone, they've been a couple of standalones. You know, and it's really good. And this is one, Robert, I know that you being an old Navy guy can fully appreciate. But I will tell you, when we were able to get the military widow's tax eliminated,
oh my gosh,
to me is the proudest day I've ever had in the Senate.
Absolutely.
It was because of a lady down in Mobile, Kathy Milford, who came to my office and told us about this travesty that military widows were getting denied benefits because of an arcane way that they offset benefits for surviving spouses of veterans who died as a result of a service-related injury or death. And we just made it a mission. We ended up with close to 80 co-sponsors.
Oh, wow.
We got it in the NDAA. And I'm telling you, out of all the things I've done, there's been some interesting moments in the Senate. I've had some interesting times to give speeches. But that day, I had 30 of those ladies sitting in the gallery. I still get emotional talking about it. It was an amazing day.
And that's the kind of stuff that we really want our elected officials doing, is identifying problems and solving problems that impact real people and not in that constant ongoing food fight. So, hey, Senator Jones, we have about a minute left. I know you have a hard stop. So I'll give you the floor for the last minute here if you want to talk about your competitor in this upcoming election and why you're better, or if you just want to just kind of close it out with your ending message. I'm leaving the last minute to you.
Well, thank you, Robert. And thank you for having me tonight. And I'll only mention him in one context. Look, he's not talking to the media. He's not getting out there. He's not talking because he really doesn't have a plan. Every time that he opens his mouth, it shows that doesn't have the experience, and he's not trying to be prepared to be a United States senator. And I think that's what sets us apart. I've done the best I could do for Alabama, and I think we've had a lot of success. Not everybody out there agrees with every vote I've taken. They'll never agree with every vote I've taken. You got a beautiful lady sitting next to you up there that I guarantee you she doesn't agree with everything you do.
She doesn't agree with anything I do, but that's a conversation for another day.
But the fact is, if you look at the whole, if you look at all that we've done for veterans, for farmers, for people right there in Mobile at Austell and Airbus and up in Huntsville at Redstone Arsenal, keeping our military strong and safe and bringing in those federal dollars. If you look at the voices that we've had for equality to make sure that all boats are lifted, you know, and all people are created equal, it's truly a voice that represents Alabama values. And don't be persuaded by some of the false ads that are going out there about my views on guns, my views on abortion, those kind of things. Those are just false. They're just flat out false, Robert. I think people look with what we've done. It's a record we're really proud of, and we've got so much more we can do with a full term, and I look forward to it. So thank you.
Thank you
so much for having me, guys.
And thank you so much for joining us. We really do appreciate it, and we'll look forward to seeing you here in a little bit.
DougJones.com.
You got it.
It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama. Your calls, comments, and texts are welcome at 251-343-0106.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do. And don't you ever forget that.
And now your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. For those of you who are just now joining us, during the first half of the program, we spent a nice chunk of time talking to Senator Doug Jones. We know his schedule is really busy, particularly balancing the Senate with running for office, and we really do appreciate him taking the time to spend a few minutes with us on a busy Friday evening. So now, Sitting next to me is Dr. J.T. Averhart with my lovely wife, Aqua Lynn Kennedy, as well. So, Aqua, what did you think about our conversation there with Senator Jones?
I think it was fantastic. I mean, every time we talk, you know, he's just such a stand-up guy. And one of the things I think that we need to see in one another, even though I'm not doing the official Tell Me Something Good today because it's a very special occasion, but we just need to look at, you know, who people are for who they are. You know, we are individuals. If we imagined each person as a child, like the first question you asked, tell me about you growing up. You know, when we were children, we all had very similar wants, needs, you know, and we kind of started in a really great place. And I think if we looked at the child in each of us and started to understand as we grow, our environment and things that happen shaped us and shaped what we want to do and how we want to care for people. And I think that's very clear in what he shared. So only thing I'd say is that Second Amendment conversation, I know you talked about a lot of guys.
Right.
There are a whole lot of women, too,
okay,
that feel the same way.
Do you want to go ahead and tell the audience? Do you want to let them know now, or shall we hold it off for later?
We can hold it off for later, but it's not just a guy thing. I'll tell you that.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So Dr. Averhart, thank you for joining us this evening. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. Just a little tired. How are you?
I know. You're ripping and running all That's around right. the district. You said you were up in Grove Hill?
Grove Hill and Jackson today.
All right. Shout out to Grove Hill and Jackson. So thank you so much for coming down and spending a little bit more time with us. So
well, thank you for having me.
We have a caller on the line. So let's go see who we have. Hello. You're on the line with Kennedy for Alabama. Who do we have tonight?
This is Fred.
Hey, Fred. How you been?
I've been really good, and I wanted to thank you for your show. First of all, you and Aqua and your beautiful wife, I mean, y'all do a wonderful job.
Thank you.
You
can call anytime,
that.
Fred. Anytime.
So what's on your mind, Fred?
Well, I just wanted to follow up to Senator Jones's comments. I did early voting. Well, not early voting in Alabama. It's absentee voting in person.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to make it down and do that?
I was able to do that. I did it on a Wednesday. There was not very many people. I'm over 65, so that problem was, not negligible. So wasn't any issue there. And I got a chance to cast my vote for the Biden-Harris ticket.
Okay.
I also got a chance to vote for Senator Jones, and then I voted for local offices here, and I have to admit, Dr. Averhart, it was hard choice between you and Mr. Carl, but I know Mr. Carl personally. I have had a relationship with him, and it come down to what I knew about him personally. So it had nothing to do against your record and your service in the Marine Corps. I do commend you for that, sir, as a Navy veteran myself. I know that Marines are stout-hearted people and would generally do a good job at whatever they attempt. So, it was something that was needed to do. And I keep pointing out to people that the Democratic Party is changing, and I use Senator Jones's record more or less to do that. And he's only passed. He's had five major pieces of legislation that he's introduced, and that information is what I use to take and highlight people across. Five major pieces of legislation is amazing in the Congress today.
Yeah, you can't speak or you cannot criticize his effectiveness, because when you have 21 bipartisan bills that are co-led by somebody in the other party that are ultimately signed into law by a president of a different party, that's effective no matter how long you've actually been sitting in the chair. And so that is the thing I think folks need to focus on. And, there are a lot of perceptions about us as Alabamians that we know are not true nationally. But this is one in particular where I continue to encourage the audience to do your own research, look at what his record was for what he's actually gotten passed, and then just ask yourself what's best for the state of Alabama. So, Fred, thanks a lot for calling, man. We'll talk to you. We'll talk to you again soon, man. You take care.
You know, Rob, there's one other thing with that, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I really appreciate him being so just honest. And, that's real. This is someone that he's known for a while. quite a while, and that's a reality. And people, you know, you only have one to choose from. You have great candidates, right? I will definitely say this. What I have seen from the outside is there is a great level of respect on both sides with JT and with Carl. So it's, you know, it's you got to kind of dig a little deeper if you don't necessarily have that relationship. If you don't feel that you can pick the phone up and call either one, I hope that you'll take, you know, just a few more minutes to kind of learn more about them. But one thing I will say about my friend JT is he's already said, call me. Get to know me.
That's
I'm
right.
ready. I'm right here.
That's right.
I'm available. Give him an email. Send an email, and you are more than welcome to get to know him.
That's right. I appreciate that, Aquila.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Fred's a supporter of the show, and right. we really do appreciate him calling in and sharing his thoughts. The other thing, if you take it a level up, that I think is important, and this is something I can say that Senator Jones clearly cannot, if you decide as a local person that you want to split your ticket— You can do that, right? But I think it is going to be very potentially detrimental to the state of Alabama if we end up losing representation in both caucuses. You know, right now we have a senator that's in a Republican caucus, a senator that's in a Democratic caucus. So regardless of who wins the White House, you have representation in the majority with somebody in the state of Alabama. And with him being as effective as he has been with things like rural health care, if we're losing that to another junior senator that's only in one caucus, particularly if the White House changes hands, that is going to put Alabama in a worse spot, not necessarily a better spot. So keep that in mind as you are evaluating the candidates and deciding who it is you're going to vote for on the election day. So with that, so Dr. Averhart, You've been grinding.
I've been grinding.
Ripping and running, meeting people, shaking hands, kissing babies, all that good stuff. So take a little time and tell the audience why, given the fact that this particular district has supported primarily GOP candidates in the past, they should consider your candidacy this year and do something that perhaps they haven't done before.
Well, I appreciate that, Robert. First of all, thank you for inviting me to the show. Definitely enjoyed Senator Jones' comments earlier. I had the opportunity to spend a lot of time with him this week and do some things and get to know him as well. And I want to thank Fred for coming on the line as well and for his kind words. And that's the great thing about a democracy. You have the opportunity to pick and choose who you would like to be to represent you. As it pertains to me as a candidate, I understand this is my first time out, and you know there's not a lot of name recognition in the infinite part of this campaign run. Mm-hmm. But I bring a fresh new alternative to the party, to the district. You know, as an individual who has served 30 years in the Marine Corps, I've already shown that I can serve on a national level.
Absolutely.
You know, and I've taken an oath, and I want to think that I've did all that I could do to as it pertains to my oath to my country, and I represented my state and my country and the citizen of my community as well. So I bring a fresh new alternative. I've proven that I can work on that level, and I'm ready to do it.
Yeah, and I really do appreciate you highlighting that. One of the things that I wanted to do was I wanted to circle back to some of the stuff that we talked about during your last visit here at Kennedy 4, Alabama. Uh-huh. And some things that we really got some positive feedback on because people, I don't think, necessarily fully appreciated what it was. The first thing that I actually want to touch on is just your background, right?
Right.
So where did you grow up, and what did you do as you were in your formative years?
Right. So I grew up born and raised here in Mobile.
Okay.
I grew up in the Maysville area, the Brooklynville area. My mom lived and resided in Brooklynville. My grandmother lived in Maysville.
Okay.
However, I spent the majority of my time at my grandmother's house as the rest of my siblings and cousins and so forth. You know, so I was raised by the village. As I stated, my father was killed here in Mobile. And, you know, so that's how I became to be raised by the village. Mm-hmm. However, I went to school here, Palmer Pillins and Williamson.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point, my grandfather pulled me up to Monroeville.
That's right.
And I graduated in 1986. From J.L. Shields High School.
And I like you emphasizing that because it's like we had more of the urban experience in Mobile and then the rural experience when you went up to Monroeville as well.
Right.
So at that point, you ended up graduating from high school. You right. joined the Marine Corps.
Well, right? you know, one thing, I could have went to play football in college. However, my head was not in college at that particular time.
Okay.
And, you know, I didn't want to waste my mother's money, for one.
Well, so you know, that ain't going to happen.
Right. So, you know, plus I wasn't going to do anything to embarrass her.
Right.
And so I just wanted to make sure I got my head, you know, straight. And I signed up for 4 years, but my 4 years turned into 30 years.
That's
I
amazing.
Found my niche.
That's amazing.
And what things that I was good at. And the Marine Corps provided a great opportunity to allow me to matriculate up the ranks, to get an education. I often talk about being a warden of three prisons and a commissioner over 12. With that said, you know, I was worked on an executive level, a myriad of executive jobs in leadership and management. So I had to prove that leadership. You know, I often talk about, you know, as I speak to other veterans, you know, you and I both, you know, you was in the Navy, I was in the Marine Corps, and we can tell those type of military jokes. However,
of course.
And I often say that the Marine Corps is the Harvard of leadership, if you would.
Credit, got to give credit where credit's due, right?
You know, so having an opportunity, and I retired out the Pentagon, you know, and working on those levels, having to brief on an executive level, and had the opportunity to work on Capitol Hill. Nowhere else would I have had the opportunity to do that.
Right.
To maneuver those halls of Congress, you know, both in the House and the Senate, to get a bipartisan bill signed by the President of the United States at the time.
And I actually want to pull that thread just a little bit. So when we were talking about Senator Jones and bipartisan bills, so he as a Democrat, as a leader, a co-lead on the Republican side, navigating through to ultimately get the bill signed. Well, you, from a military perspective, were working under the umbrella of the United States Marine Corps to do the same thing, navigate through the bureaucracy and get the bill passed. So you're unique in the sense that you've had that experience. You've actually done it. So we have less than a minute left right now. So just tell folks, what was your specialty in the Marine Corps?
Well, when I initially went into the Marine Corps, I was basic infantry, had combat time as a and weapons company as a machine gunner.
Okay.
But the Marine Corps was downsizing, so I went into military policing.
That's right.
And then I didn't really like that, and so I went over to the correction. That's what I found my niche.
Okay, so we are going to pick back up on military corrections because there's been some very interesting polling data that's come out here over the last few weeks about the governor's proposal for private prisons.
Right.
But I do want to spend a little bit more time talking about that and some of the stereotypes that are associated with the Democratic Party right now with regards to policing.
Right.
So if you could hold on for a few minutes, we'll continue this conversation on the other side.
Most definitely.
All right. You're on with Kennedy for Alabama.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Lines are open at 251-343-0106. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. So before we went to the break, we were talking to Dr. J.T. Averhart, who is the Democratic nominee for United States Congress for Alabama District 1. And we were going a little bit through his career in the Marine Corps, and we had just settled on his transition from military policing into military corrections. So tell us a little bit about the military corrections field and just kind of how you progressed through that.
Well, the military correction field is a very unique. Most people, when you think about prison, you think about the brig. That's the equivalent. And most on that level, you think about Fort Leavenworth. So I've commanded facilities of such on the same caliber as Fort Leavenworth.
Gotcha.
And during the same period, I had 160 Marines that worked for me at Fort Leavenworth.
Gotcha.
So I retired as the head of Marine Corps Correction, which is equivalent to the Commissioner of Correction for the Marine Corps.
Right.
Between the Army and the Marine Corps just was to see the senior in the senior branch of service to have oversight.
Gotcha.
So that put me in that position as well. So with that, you know, again, I commanded three facilities and basically matriculated up to be the head of Marine Corps Corrections.
And I think this is important when it comes to countering stereotypes. So there has been some language, and the reporting has been true, where someone established a hashtag that said defund the police.
Right.
And that created the impression that those of us within the Democratic Party aren't necessarily focused on making sure that individuals are held accountable when the courts have deemed that so. So just tying that to what it was you did as a military occupational specialty, what are your view on public prisons versus private prisons, and just kind of what's your point of view about what the governor is thinking about doing with this leasing prisons proposal?
Well, this is a serious issue. Mm-hmm. You know, I've also served now as the, you know, not since running for Congress, but as the executive director of the Mobile Branch NAACP.
Yes, absolutely.
So I'm the executive director. Mm-hmm. With that said, we've had the opportunity to visit jails and prisons and mm-hmm. such. And the state of condition that Alabama prisons are in is in great need of repair.
So I
agree with repairment or renovation. However, I don't agree with private prisons. I would do all that I can, you know, to advocate to keep private prisons from opening, you know, in our state. However, I understand that's the governor's, you mm-hmm. know, it falls in the state level.
It is.
But as far as private prisons, you know, I'm no friend of private prisons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a member of the American Correctional Association, and working on that level, I've seen, had the opportunity to get great insight.
Right.
To visit a lot of prisons, military jails, as well as civilian jails.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to prison, our main thing we should focus on is number one, the safety and security of the prisons.
Absolutely.
And the prisoners and the staff members as well.
Mm-hmm.
And all prisons should be controlled to be safe and secure.
Right.
You know, as far as defunding and such, you know, I think we need our police services.
Absolutely.
You know, we need, if something should happen right now, the first thing we're going to do is dial 911. Now, do I think that needs to be some reform? Yes, I do.
Absolutely.
You know, are there bad people in every group in the organization? Mm-hmm. Yes, there are. And so that's what the focus should be directed towards. However, we should, when we say defund, that needs to be truly defined. We need to talk about programming.
Absolutely.
You know, programming, how we get those funds out to our communities, out to our jails, and also to our officers to make sure they have the equipment and that they'll go through proper training and continuing training
mm-hmm.
and education. Because education, it must be continuous, and they should be thoroughly informed. Now, are there some laws I wish that we had in place at a state level, local level, like body cams?
Absolutely, yes.
You know, in 2020, our state of technology, you know, it provides the opportunity to do so.
You know, it's interesting. I was just thinking about an incident that happened here over the last day or two where somebody tried to force entry into WKRG.
Right.
And the person was bashing the window, ultimately ended up breaking it, got to the second door. They were in the process of breaking that, and that is when law enforcement showed up.
Right.
And so I want to take the opportunity right now to compliment law enforcement.
Right.
If that had gone sideways, it would have been national news.
Right.
But it didn't. You could see they were being recorded. They were very professional in terms of how they interacted with that individual. Clearly, it was somebody who was having a mental health episode.
Right.
And so I think that we should spend as much time complimenting the good things as we do indicting the bad things.
Right.
And like you mentioned, when you talked about the Marine Corps being the Harvard of leadership, ultimately that's what it comes down to, leadership and accountability.
Right.
So we can enthusiastically support law enforcement while at the same time wanting to hold people accountable for systems, actions, processes that can ultimately be improved.
Well, Robert, you missed something great. It comes down to accountability.
Absolutely.
Who's in charge, you know, whether it's the chief or the sheriff on the state level, the governor,
right.
and so forth. There has to be some accountability as it pertains to correction, the commissioner of correction.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be some guidance, some legislation to, you know, that need to be enforced.
Right.
You know, not subjectively, you know, brush things under the rug. I'm not about that. You know, I am truly about accountability.
Absolutely.
And transparency.
And while we're talking about accountability, we can also talk about rights and responsibilities.
Right.
And as we start going towards Election Day, we know that as society, we have a responsibility to participate in the process.
Right.
So what are your thoughts about what's happening right now with regards to absentee voting, getting prepared for Election Day, et cetera?
Well, I'm truly excited to see the citizens around our community and more so our district that's getting individuals registered to vote. We know the deadline is on October the 19th,
yep.
Getting people out to the polls. on a daily basis. You know, we can do in-person absentee voting now. Mm-hmm. And so, and then on the next two Saturdays, the 17th and the 24th, you know, you have churches that have gotten involved.
It's amazing.
Transport citizen to the polls. So I think it's a great thing, and we're creating a movement. And, you know, and so just to see everyone come together to understand how important this election is this year, you know, I'm excited.
Absolutely. And so we have just a couple minutes left before the show ends. Let us know how listeners can get in contact with you or get in contact with your campaign if they want to learn more.
Well, I appreciate it, Robert. So like I said previously, that I'm willing and I want to talk to our citizens, our constituents. You know, if anyone have a question, they can definitely go to our website, www.jamesaberhart.com. Email me directly, and I will respond back within 24 hours. There's a phone number there. Call and leave a message if no one answers. And, again, I will definitely get back with the citizen at that particular time, my soonest.
I appreciate that. So thank you for taking some time to come spend with us again. Right.
Thank you.
And so we're about to go into the last minute here. So what's your closing argument? What's it that you want the audience to know about you?
Well, you know, I definitely want the citizens to get to know who I am. You know, as I stated previously, I bring a fresh new alternative to the district as a service member, someone who is competent, capable, and qualified. I definitely will not embarrass the citizens of Alabama, nor myself or my family. I want people to be informed. Not influence. I understand, again, you know, these long-lasting relationships and loyalty and such. But when you go in that poll, I think you should research the candidates and then vote your conscience.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I'm asking the citizen to vote for a patriot, not a politician.
Vote for a patriot, not a politician. We definitely need more of that. So with that, we're starting to come to the end of Kennedy for Alabama. We definitely want to take the opportunity to thank Senator Doug Jones for calling into the show, spending a little bit of time with us, sharing his thoughts on the issues of the day, as well as a little bit about his childhood, his upbringing, his love for hunting and things like that. Thanks again to Dr. J.T. Averhart for driving in from Grove Hill and Jackson to be here with us in studio. Thank you to my lovely wife, Auckland.
And I want to thank you, too, babe. You've been hanging in there and doing your thing for a while and just, you know, giving people a platform, and I'm just so proud of you. But yeah. I also want to thank everybody who's running. It is not easy. And
not
I don't know
all.
If y'all have run or not. I've been on the sidelines. It is not easy, and these folks do not do it for the glory.
Well, thank you, baby, for that as well. And to the listening audience, thank you so much for tuning in. We will look forward to talking to you again next week. Until that time, my name is Robert Kennedy Jr., and this is Kennedy for Alabama.